Back Talk is an extension of the award-winning movie review show It's Movie Time, which airs on Fridays at 4:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, the podcast features additional content and banter with guests. Back Talk is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
And I love hearing that. And I'm John DeSando.
And I'm KG Klein.
And this is Back Talk. This is time for us to step up our game, because the name of this film is Eddington.
Eddington. There are movies that are easy to review, John, like Lilo and Stitch and How to Train Your Dragon.
Right, and Mission Impossible.
Mission Impossible. Yes. And then there are movies that really challenge us, that take us to top of our game and really make us think. And this is definitely one of them.
When you first proposed it to me, and before I really knew it was coming out, I was hooked immediately. Ari Aster is a weirdo that I love. Joaquin Phoenix, what can't he act?
Exactly. Yeah. Whenever he does a movie, you know this is going to be a top-notch performance. Yeah. He is very picky.
And Emma Stone, though, she's not given much in this film.
She doesn't have that much to do. Pedro Pascal,
he's
great performance, but also not given all that much to do. But this is a movie that you go to because it's an Ari Aster movie. Ari Aster is very much like the new David Lynch.
And I agree with you. Now, would you say there's a little bit of Wes Anderson thrown in
there's
here?
A little bit of Wes Anderson in the very stylized way, but both Ari Aster and David Lynch like to tell existential journeys that become more and more bizarre as the film progresses.
Yes.
You know, good examples of Lynch's ones are Inland Empire, which is 4 hours of my life that I'll never get back, and Mulholland Drive. But what makes Lynch and Aster different is that Aster keeps the story in the real world. Lynch, of course, loved aliens and magic and strange creatures all the way from Eraserhead right up to his last movie. His movies were full of them. But Aster will not do that. He keeps it real right up to the point when you start realizing it is so bizarre, it can't possibly be real.
Ari is telling a story that nobody else has dared to tell yet about COVID.
Yes, and you know, 5 years in the making, this movie is set May of 2020.
Right.
He is at the height of COVID. The shutdown is in place. Mask wearing is mandatory. And in this little town of Eddington, New Mexico, population 2,500, a war is now raging between the people who want to follow the CDC's recommendations and the conservative folks who want to defy them because they just don't want to wear masks.
And although we have the character, the sheriff, played by Joaquin Phoenix, and although he's on one side and the mayor, who is on, let me see, the liberal side, but Phoenix plays it as if he's almost right in the middle.
He is such an unstable character. As the sheriff, he's trying to follow the rules and trying to keep people to follow the masking rule. But then when a fellow walks into the grocery store and refuses to mask and gets kicked out, he goes in and buys all the groceries the guy wanted to buy and brings them out and gives them to him and says, here, you know, you shouldn't be treated that way.
Yeah.
And this is just the first 15 minutes of the story, folks. This story degenerates very quickly. It's not just about COVID. Then it starts getting into the Floyd murder and the Black Lives Matter movement, and it picks up on almost every topical thing that was going on,
which I think
in
is,
May of 2020.
Is not necessarily in its favor.
And I would agree. I'm very sensitive to things that are being used for entertainment or storytelling value that may be a little exploitational. Getting into the Floyd murder, that's a subject I don't think should have been touched upon.
One of the things that I really appreciate that Ari has done here, he has taken by the throat the technological advances that we have made. Cell phones play a big part in this. And as a matter of fact, there's contention about a new technology that's going to move right into their territory that is computer related. But every time our sheriff pulls out his phone, it almost looks like he's pulling out his gun. I found that because I think I'm very sensitive to the fact of how much we rely now in contemporary movies on cell phone. Well, Ari has done a good job of at least pointing it out to me how much even our sheriff and everybody else abides by the dictates of the cell phone.
The cell phone and other technology.
Yeah.
And as this movie degenerates,
great
it
word.
Pulls in more and more topical subjects, but it never really addresses any of them. That may be the actual point that Ari is going for here, is that these subjects are open to so many different interpretations that there is no right or wrong, in his view, is a complicated mess that can never be sorted out.
It's a hot mess of ideas. Things that he does very well is to point out difficulty of dealing with masks when we were into it.
Yeah.
And where, when we should have our masks on and where, was not an easy measure. And he does it very well.
He covers both sides of the situation, although, again, he gets off topic of that fairly quickly and then gets into the Black Lives Matter movement. At this point, the whole movie just spirals out of control. The life of the sheriff spirals out of control, right up to the point where he decides, the sheriff, played by Phoenix, immature character, he's very sensitive, he's very reactionary, and he decides, because the mayor is siding with the masking, that he's going to run for mayor. He's going to jump into the race and oppose him on the masking grounds. But that lasts all of up 10 seconds before he starts opposing him on the Black Lives Matter, on other topical issues.
Yeah.
And then he starts covering his car with all these conspiracy theories that he's running as a platform. And I just love, as the movie progresses, what's showing up on his car gets more bizarre every time you see it.
I love the moment when he's pulling away and the top...
and the top gets knocked off by a tree branch.
And we never see it again.
Yeah. But the movie, about an hour in, takes a 90-degree turn that you need to brace yourself for. And it's about the moment when the mayor slaps the sheriff. Not just once, but twice.
Yes.
And then suddenly, the movie turns into a revenge film. It gets more and more out of control with every passing moment, more and more violent, and you're just sitting there watching this train wreck unfold before you finally realize it has gotten so bizarre that Astor cannot be telling a truthful, real story.
Well, he's dipped into thriller territory, bizarre thriller
territory. He's dipped into David Lynch territory.
Yeah.
Without the tiny little laughing people and the magical device in the purse, he never goes into magic or aliens or any of that. He keeps it grounded. But while you're watching this movie, you reach a point in your mind where you realize this is not factual. This is not real. This might even be a dream.
He also dips into the familial warfare. That is, gets right down to family and how divisive political stances are, or how divisive it is to either follow or not follow government dictates.
How easily things can get out of control.
Oh, yeah.
In this little town of 2,500 people, he's got hundreds of school kids protesting Black Lives Matter in the streets.
Yes.
The response of Joaquin Phoenix's character is anything but what you'd want a sheriff to do, because he is such an immature, he's not that smart, and he does almost everything wrong at every moment.
Yeah, Phoenix does a terrific job of showing somebody who is really mentally unstable.
Very unstable.
Yeah.
Very unstable. Watching his town spiraling out of control, watching his politics, watching his marriage to Emma. We haven't even mentioned Emma Stone's in this movie.
Yes.
Watching his marriage spiraling out of control, and all of it under very bizarre circumstances.
And then Austin Butler coming in as the savior. I don't know what the heck he's
is a conspiracy theory evangelical who knows exactly what to say to get someone like Emma Stone's character, who is very easily manipulated, convinced that he is the word, that what he is saying is the answer. And then, of course, she runs off with him.
So, Ken, we're talking about Eddington. And I know that friends of mine who are cinephiles, and you especially, were looking forward to this film. I think it's a disappointment for me, because I don't think it's going to draw. Two of us are, we're big fans of movies. We're being cautious here.
And I think you're absolutely right, John. His first film that came to my attention was Midsommar. And Midsommar was the film, of course, that brought Florence Pugh to our attention.
Yes.
But that movie was grounded in reality. It was a slow burn, of a life getting out of control. This movie is similar to this, to Midsommar, because it doesn't have the magical elements. But then his second film, Beau is Afraid, same thing, existential. Okay. Beau is Afraid does have magical elements into it. So with this film, he's going back to his roots to a more Midsommar movie, although this movie is so much more a train wreck than Midsommar ever was.
It is, for people like us, a great movie to see.
It is not a date night movie.
Our good friends and our fellow critics, we might be cautious about.
Yeah, it's a very elusive movie.
Yeah.
As you're watching it, it's very hard to understand where it's going and what it's saying at any given moment.
All right, K.G. Klein, what do you recommend about Eddington?
If you're a fan of David Lynch, if you're a fan of Ari Aster, of course you're going to see this movie. It's exactly what
you kind of... And throw in Wes Anderson.
And throw in Wes Anderson. And this is the kind of movie that people who enjoy Anderson and Lynch and Aster will enjoy. Is it Aster's best movie? No. Is it confusing? Is it elusive? Yes. Will you find something to take away from it? Yes. But as an ordinary date night movie, oh no, avoid, avoid.
And let me throw in, proves to me again that Joaquin Phoenix is one of the great actors of all time.
He is, he is.
Well, for two movie devotees who are being cautious about Eddington, one of the topics and one of the, perhaps a weakness of the film is that there are so many different topics that are not explored here, is the pedophile theme.
Well, almost none of the topics in this movie are explored, and certainly Aster does not give us his position in any of them.
Yeah.
We never come away from this movie knowing what Aster's opinion of any of these topics are. He seems more focused on confusing us and then telling us the confusion is the nature of the topic.
It got my attention when Austin Butler came on as Vernon, as this kind of savior who had all the catchphrases, but I don't know what the heck he's talking about.
He knows exactly what to say to manipulate weak-minded people.
But Ken, didn't you think the timing, I thought, was really fortuitous when you consider the resurgence of the Jeffrey Epstein business?
As much as it's resurging, yes.
Yeah. You know, as it's coming back and as the pedophilia is, and that was a part of this film, at least when it got to that point, I said, oh, yeah, okay, here we go. Another contemporary topic.
Yeah.
No, but they don't flesh it out.
They don't flesh anything out in this movie. And the sad thing is, this movie is probably 3 years past due. We've never really had a movie about the COVID pandemic and in May of 2000 and the shutdown and the masking. And we've needed one. Of course we've needed one.
Yeah, yeah.
And you would think that one of our more liberal directors would have tried to tackle that before now. But this is not the definitive film about COVID. This movie throws so much garbage into the disposal and then grinds it all up, purees it, and gives us with nothing left but a lost view of humanity.
We need Ari to tackle the Trump phenomenon. The divisiveness.
The divisiveness
of that presidency. It can be explored in his way.
I would want a director who is willing to be factual, point out the problems, and be very grounded. Ari's not that person. Ari's going to puree it and throw everything else into it, and it's going to be a big mess. I would love to see Spielberg tackle Trump. I would love to see one of our great directors do a story, a film about Trump.
Yeah.
But now we're off, and I'm glad that Esther didn't throw Trump into this mix, because the last thing this movie needs is yet another topical subject mixed into
it. As far as satire goes and analysis goes, the Trump phenomenon in a few years.
Oh, gosh, that movie is definitely overdue.
Am I way off to have felt the presence of No Country for Old Men?
Yeah, there's some No Country for Old Men in this.
As we're talking about the West, evil.
Yeah.
And divisiveness and
the
so
device,
on.
Yeah.
They're actually, the Coens, having that satire that's amusing, and yet we can get a piece of it.
Oh, gosh,
I think the Coens in their early
Coens
days.
Coens could do it. There are quite a few very competent directors out there who could do it.
Now, listen, I wanted to ask Civil War, Garland.
Yeah, now Garland is somebody who's avoided tackling Trump.
I know.
Because he could have turned Civil War into a much more realistic depiction.
He really tried not to take it.
He pulled all the politics out of Civil War deliberately.
He did, yeah.
So he would, if given the opportunity, he will not do it.
If he's willing to do it.
If he were willing to do it, Garland would be an excellent choice, certainly.
Midsommar.
Midsommar was a great film. Came out, I believe, in 2019. First time we really saw Florence
Pugh.
Good one,
right.
Largely an adaptation of an earlier film from the 70s called The Wicker Man.
That's right.
Great film with Christopher Lee and about an island in England where people are still holding on to ancient religion, and in Midsommar it's set in Sweden, but The Wicker Man was set in England.
I see, yeah.
But yeah, both are dealing with ancient religions and ancient gods and ancient displays and rituals.
Yeah, at Florence Pugh.
Goes off with her boyfriend and his friends to Sweden in the hopes of saving their relationship after her parents are killed. She gets there and finds that this is a cult. And as the movie spirals out of control, she becomes the feature character who's watching everything around her just fall apart. This movie is very similar to that in that it stays in reality, but it's Joaquin Phoenix this time watching his whole life spiral out of control. And just like Florence Pugh, who is a fairly weak person, very easily manipulated, so is our sheriff in this movie. Another movie that this reminds me of, though, is Apocalypse Now. And idea of a character on an existential journey, watching the world slowly fall apart around him, and forces that are beyond his control because of the nature of his personality and the nature of the environment that he's in. And all we can do there is sit and watch as the train wreck unfolds.
Well, and talking about a train wreck and Ari's films, one that I'm reminded of is Hereditary. That's one talk about disintegration of family.
Exactly.
He's very good at that.
He seems to like to write stories where we're watching the breakdown of a character.
Yeah.
We're watching a character in a position of some authority that slowly starts falling away and reality starts twisting, and before you know it, everything just becomes an existential mess. Yeah.
We have a couple of good movies that you've recommended to me that we have coming up.
Oh, we do.
What I'm thinking of is Substance for the Summer.
Yes.
So far we've had really, well, Americans do very well, those big spectaculars.
Yep. And normally the summer is the blockbuster season, but we've got a movie coming out next weekend that is very likely going to be a Best Picture nominee, and that movie is called Sorry Baby.
Yes.
It's a very good cast. The big thing about this is a movie made by a female director, female writer.
This is the abuse. Is this the one where she was abused?
The character is a graduate student in college who is sexually assaulted by her professor. All of this happens off screen, and what we end up with is her telling her story to her friend. But she's telling the story in a way that almost becomes humorous. She's reflecting upon these events. This is not a serious down film. This is a movie that takes the subject matter and makes it very fresh and very exciting.
Well, as I'm looking ahead toward this weekend, one of that I have to face is Fantastic Four.
Oh, Fantastic Four.
I'm thinking there's a connection between that and this film, and that's Pablo Pascal.
Pablo Pascal, again, in both of them.
Who I can't believe is one of the Fantastic Four.
Well, Marvel is going to give this one a try. This is their cursed franchise. There was a Fantastic Four TV show in the 70s. There was a Fantastic Four movie, I believe, in the 80s that bombed. Then Marvel tried again with Fantastic Four very early in the MCU, and it also tanked. So they are trying one more time to bring us a Fantastic Four movie that they can put into the MCU universe, because the Fantastic Four are set in the 1960s, so they predate all the other events of the MCU universe. They predate Iron Man, and this is a way of going back and pulling the original Marvel superheroes and trying to get them into the MCU universe.
To make it more attractive to us and more accessible, they do have Pascal playing a lead.
They have Pascal in there, and the thing that is attracting me to this movie is the mid-century style of the sets and the props.
And even the color looks
like
it.
It is right out of an Eames catalog. It's Herman Miller. It's going to wrap everybody who loves 60s modern style is going to just love this movie, because it's been ages. We haven't seen a movie with the sets like this since Pillow Talk with Rock Hudson.
Well, K.G. Klein, you can tell we're getting toward the end of our summer, and we're getting a little bit crazed, and we're getting a little bit like the filmmakers we like, who are all over the place and wild, and because I think we're a little surfeit of these heroic films.
We do. And I'm going to mention one more movie that comes out in 2 weeks.
I want to hear it. Yeah.
And this is Molly Gordon, who's a favorite of mine. Molly Gordon's got a new rom-com coming out with a little bit of a science fiction twist called Oh Hi.
Oh Hi, yes.
So we've got Sorry Baby next weekend, and then Oh Hi the following weekend.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the challenge. So K.G. Klein, the film that we have struggled with. And because we are promoters of films and good films, we see good and not so good in the current movie that we're looking at. I'm wondering, what is your advice about Eddington?
About Eddington, this is an interesting film. This is tremendous performances from Phoenix, Emma Stone, Pablo Pascal.
Yes.
But it confused me, which means this is a very elusive movie. I think this is a movie that doesn't end up saying anything, and you really wish it did.
Kat, you're reminding me, as we were talking about this shotgun approach that Astor has taken on this, you know, what topic haven't I covered? Well, one of them is gun violence.
Yeah.
And what a terrific ending, terrific meaning. What a mess of ending.
There's a scene near the end of this movie. This is how crazy this movie gets, where he goes into a gun shop, and he comes out like Rambo, and this is Joaquin Phoenix, Rambo holding a Vietnam War era M60, yeah, firing off from a drum and just shooting the whole town up, just like Rambo did at the end of First Blood.
There's
no one who can tell me and convince me that Ari Aster did not see First Blood and was not inspired by the same thing with Sylvester Stallone shooting up the town with an M60.
Anyway, as we're ending our talking, I really enjoyed that ending because it released all of my anxiety about this movie when I was saying to myself, oh, my God, I'm so glad Ken is reviewing this with me because this is one hot mess.
Well, here's my final take on this movie. The first hour of this movie is about all the controversy, and then it takes that 90-degree turn, and it turns into an action film.
Yes.
I like the second half, the action film part, a lot more than I like the first hour, because the first hour, with all these controversies and all of these political issues, it becomes such a mess.
Yeah.
Whereas the second hour
is exactly what it is.
Yeah, you can at least follow, okay, it's Joaquin Phoenix, he's got an M60, he's shooting the town up. That's easy.
And you got to enjoy what happens to our lead character toward the end of the film.
I mean,
and this is Astor's having fun.
You got to hang in for this, but don't expect it to get any less elusive at the end.
You will not have anybody but Ken, and to some extent me, recommend Eddington to you.